Welcome to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast, where we share knowledge, philosophies, wisdom, and insight to help you on your journey in both sport and life. Introducing your host, Rob Riles.
Hello, and welcome to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast. It's Rob Riles welcoming you to another edition. Now, this afternoon, I'm with somebody who I'm very humble to call a good friend, somebody I've known a long, long time. And I'm going to introduce you to him, and he's agreed to give us, you know, a little bit of his time. And he's somebody who's worked extensively in professional football. And the guy I'm talking to is Mark Leather. So I'm going to introduce Mark, and then I'm going to ask him to tell us a little bit about his life. But and he can correct me if any of this is wrong. He spent a long time, I think it was in excess of 5 or 6 years, as a head physiotherapist at Liverpool Football Club. He's been head physio at Sunderland, Preston, Burnley, Brighton. He's been head of performance medicine at Bolton Wanderers. He's worked in professional rugby at Wigan Warriors. He's worked at University, World University Games, Commonwealth Games. He's been a physiotherapist for England Futsal. He's, and I know because I've worked with him, and I had some real great times as a senior lecturer for the Football Association. He's been a consultant physiotherapist for different companies with an injury treatment, prevention, management aspect. He's, I think, still currently a course leader for an MSc course, a unique course, football science and rehabilitation, MSc in football, medical leadership and performance at UCLan. He is the director of Mark Leather Physiotherapy Limited, and I also believe, something I found out, he's a guest columnist for the Daily Mail. So Mark, welcome to Leader, Manager, Coach.
Thank you very much.
I know you as a renowned physiotherapist, but somebody who is a born entertainer, Mark. I'm going to get that out there straight away. And somebody who's as easy to get on with as falling off a log. But look, before we kind of, I ask you anything specific, just tell us a little bit about how you came to get into the work that you did.
Well, I've always been interested in sport. I've always been interested in football in particular. And even as a kid and a young teenager growing up in the delightful town of Bolton, Lancashire, I played football only at a local level for the school teams. I watched football extensively. I was, and still am, a lifelong Bolton Wanderers fan, but my father and older brother were more interested in Liverpool Football Club, which I used to go watch in Liverpool as well. But I was always a Bolton fan, and I liked to be around football, even to the point of doing a referee's qualification. When I hurt my knee in the sixth form at school playing football, I was doing my rehab after that and started to do a bit more on the refereeing side of things, just while to get myself fit. And I was treated at Bolton Royal Infirmary, which is no longer there, by these guys in the gym and the pool and the outpatients department. And I liked what they were doing. I thought it was pretty good, but too late for me to do much about it in terms of finishing my A-levels and applying to go to that college to become a physio or remedial gymnast, as it was initially in my early career. So I took a job. I'd no idea what I wanted to do, but I was told I had to get a job, clearly. And so my mum used to work in a bank 50 years ago, who knows. And so I get this job in a bank, and I rolled up into what was Williams and Glynn's Bank, the Royal Bank,
that
of,
Royal
Scotland,
Bank of Scotland, yeah.
On Deansgate in Bolton. I rolled up there with my letter of introduction, day one, 8:30. And the door opened and shut once I'd given this guy my letter, and reopened again. In you come, welcome aboard, welcome to the bank. And within an hour, I realised he'd made a horrendous mistake.
Yeah.
So all the things that were being told to me from the age of 14, 15, 16, 17, get your qualifications, work hard, play hard, blah-de-blah, Mark Leather knew better, and then it all came cascading around me at that moment.
Was that an anxiety time when you realised I've made a mistake here?
I made a huge mistake of not pulling my finger out and working for GCSEs and working for A-levels. If I was applying now for it to be a physio, like a lot of us really, you want to get through the first application stage. You wouldn't even think of applying. It's a waste of time. You know, because you didn't have the academic qualifications to do it. Now, at that time, my mum and dad split up.
Yep.
My brother leaves to be married, and Mark Leather is stuck in a disjointed background of family turmoil. And most of my friends have already gone to their colleges and universities doing whatever they're doing. And I thought, you've got one chance. I call it a ghetto. It wasn't a ghetto, and it isn't a ghetto, but it's where my roots are. But it felt like it at that moment in time. And so, therefore, I went to a night school in Bolton, enrolling on a human biology GCSE. And I went back to Bolton Royal Infirmary and got some experience as and when I could do, which was basically taking annual leave because I was working full-time in the bank. So weekends were no good because I couldn't get into the hospital to be on a placement. So I put myself out and I thought, I've got one shout. Will they give me a reference at the place, at Penderfields in Wakefield, Penderfields College, Penderfields Hospital, which is where I trained? And he said he would. Tom Watson, who I'll always be very grateful for giving me a reference. Because as in life, as we all know, you need the help. You need somebody
just to give
you that little helping hand. Yeah, we've all had it. But ultimately, after that, the onus is on the individual to use it or lose it, as the case may be. And so with that, I applied and I got an interview. And I went there knowing I have to impress.
Got to nail it.
Try to impress. So the first interview was quite a long one. Lots of things you had to do. A physical assessment type thing in a gym, problem solving, group tasks, individual tasks. You get invited to a second interview, which I did. And then after the second interview, that was, I just assume, looking back, was a rubber stamp, really. I was in and out in 20 minutes, as opposed to the whole day of the job.
Mm.
And that was secured in the February, and I didn't start again at college till the September. So in that bank from February through to
September,
I had the time of my life because I knew I was on my way.
I was out. I'm out.
And they used to call me Trotsky there. The idea was Trotsky because you were just a bit of a renegade. You know, you were, a free spirit.
On the edge.
On the edge. Could have gone either way in a lot of situations. But out of every bad, knowing that I'd made a real bad error, numbers of bad errors at school, I'd been given this chance. So to that bad experience, something came from it and it forced me to pull my finger out. And I've never looked back in anything since then in terms of jobs or career.
Can I just stop you there? Because this is a brilliant introduction, Mark. It couldn't have been any better. Would you say that rude awakening of, I haven't actually applied myself here and been conscious about the realities of life, has that been a driving force from then on? Because it sounds like it has. It really sounds like
it's throwing me back to, what is it now, 40 years.
The reason I ask that is because, and I'm going to say it because you won't say it, is you have been and are in the profession of that we're talking about, highly successful. And this is not to embarrass you, you have. So, and because I don't believe people get to those levels without something, I'm just digging to see if you think it's that.
I think that I felt when I left school, it was college or sixth form college, I was losing a lot of friends, as we all do. It's like an end of a chapter.
Mm.
But I left there thinking, once I got in that bank that day, you've grossly underachieved. And I look back at some of the school reports, some of the comments that were right. He's got to read. He's not 14. He's 14 years old or whatever it was. You know, easily distracted. So there's no interest in anything to do with any subject other than any sport, PE. So if there was PE, physical education, A level, then
I'm on it.
I'd have done that. And I probably would have done pretty well with it. But was I inspired by technical drawing? Or woodwork? Or English literature? You know, and these things have a bearing on you. English literature. One group did The History of Mr. Polly, my group. The worst book I have ever read in my life. The other group, bizarrely, Kestrel for the Knave by Barry Hines. The best film I have ever seen. Now, if you had asked me about that,
could have changed your life.
Everything about it. Does that mean I don't know anything about English literature to get an unclassified grade? Not really. So I felt that I'd underachieved, and probably people didn't really know the full potential, not just of me, but loads of kids are like that, loads of people. But for me, it hurt that I'm letting people down. I'm letting myself down, really. And then a few years later, at Liverpool Football Club, I get a phone call from one of the teachers of my old school. Would you like to come and present the certificates at our speech night, which was a big event for the school, on the successes, academic successes of the school, and achievements within the school, not just formal exams. And I thought, who would have thought that? When they couldn't wait to kick me out of that school, probably. Not that I was a troublemaker, I wasn't, but I just showed no interest in it and became a little bit disruptive.
Because
I just didn't do what I should be doing. And then one guy, on the night, he came up behind me and I could hear him talking to me, and he said, "This school must be scraping the barrel, Mr. Leather, for you to come here and present these." And he was joking, really, I think, because he said, what a success story for you. And everybody gets success in different ways. Some people are very clever academically, and they use that to go into universities and have good jobs. I've come a slightly different route with that. And I think that was things that I've given to my lads, three of them now young men, that your life's a journey. Everybody's got different stories to tell, different ways to get what they want to do, but you don't get anywhere really without a real inspiration and desire and hard work. And even then, that's not guaranteed.
No.
You just maybe need a bit of luck along the way, and I think you do get a bit of luck, and I think I probably have been lucky.
Are you struggling to find that extra edge to help you stand out above the crowd? Separating yourself from the rest is often about personal leadership. Achieve your true potential and become who you really can be. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course is a unique membership accessing the knowledge and wisdom from history's greats that will help you develop both personally and professionally to make you truly stand out. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course. Access now at patreon.com Leader Manager Coach.
You're very humble, and you know, you have achieved, let's face it, you know, and yes, success is whatever it is to different people, but you know, you look at your CV, Mark, there ain't going to be many people who've got a CV with as many lines on it as you, working for the organisations you've worked for, and not just the names, the diversity of stuff you've done, the lecturing, you know, and I know you're highly thought of in the world of rehab, physiotherapy, professional football. And I just want to touch on that a minute, because how many people do we know who's, especially young men, which we were once, which you are now talking about, ultimately, yeah, I want to be a footballer. Yeah, I'm going to get into football. How many letters or how many phone calls or how many people have you had put in touch with you who said, I want to do what you do. I want to get into football. I'd really like you, just tell us in a period of time, what's it like working in, what's the realities of A, maybe getting into football, and B, what's it like working in it, if you can, in a few minutes? That is a difficult question, but
well, it is, but I think that for me, it was, nobody's ever asked me any information about what grade you got for anything, what marks you got, what you're at, you know, they don't ask you that. The biggest thing is your people skills, which we've heard bandied around by loads of people, but it is a fact that your people skills, your ability to be, you know, handling the environments of people and the pressures and some egos and whatever else you want to call it. Treating people was never really difficult. Treating people or rehabbing them is, relatively speaking, pretty simple to a degree. But keeping people on track and motivating and reassuring and trust and respect and confidence, all these things, they're not just an expected given. You have to build that, and you build that by being the person that you are. So one of the most difficult people that I treated, say, at Liverpool Football Club, or had to deal with, was Mark Wright. And Mark Wright was, you know, a household name, an England international footballer, well-respected, a very, very good player. But he caused me murders, not deliberately, but he did in a way, in terms of having to deal with him and try to cajole him along at certain times. And when I left Liverpool, which was 3 years after he'd left, the first person that rang me was him to say, did I want a job? And I thought, what sort of a job are you going to be offering me? But he did say something, was that whatever you told me, he said, I know that you were always telling me for the best interest in me. You got my interests at heart. It wasn't always what I wanted to hear, he said, but in my heart of hearts, I knew. You weren't, you'd saying it and making me do things that I didn't really want to do to do that. And I think that those things are important. Is you, so I use my personality, I think, to try and win people over, or to get them to do something, rather than going in and saying, oi, come over here, you're doing this now, I don't care who you are, Billy Big Boots, you're getting that gym and do this, that and the other. That wouldn't work. You'd end up having, you know, very difficulty in controlling and getting people on your side. And so I tried to use the personality a bit of a way of cajoling and kidding them into doing things. But I wasn't really somebody that would say, you have to be in morning, afternoon and evening. But I might say, it might be good for you to at least have tried your best to get fit for a particular game. And that would mean we're going to be in a bit longer, maybe coming to a reserve team game in the evening, midweek, and rolling up for a bit of extra treatment just to show that you're giving it your best shot. Mm. I said, and then that's all they can ask. Mm. And lo and behold, you know, people would do that.
It worked.
It worked to get him on your side. I remember Jan Molby telling me, I like working with you because you're the only, for the first time in his career, which was too late really for him then, somebody was actually individualising his training. I mean, how ridiculous is that now?
After all these years, yeah.
Well, he doesn't need to go from box to box, to bouncy area to bouncy area, because he doesn't. Mm. He's around the centre circle. He might go off the pitch, he might do this, but he's not all over the pitch. No. So training like that, repeatedly, short, sharp bursts of speed endurance, with and without a ball. I remember one day getting it, I've told this to people before, I need to create an impression here to make sure that people know that it's not a soft touch, but it's not silly. So I said, right, Jan Molby, I think we could do some work with a tyre, dragging a tyre, overloading, powerful work, just over short distances. But I haven't got a tyre. Ronnie Moran said to me, I can get you a tyre. He said, I'd love to see this. Like, when are you doing this? I said, I'm going to do it after lunch. As soon as you bring it in, one day I'll do it after lunch in the afternoon. I'll get you a tyre. What sort of tyre you want? I said, I want a big tyre. I don't want just a little car tyre.
Get big tractor tyre.
Tractor tyre, that there. Next day to start. There they are. When you're doing this, I can't wait to see this. And who's on it? I said, Jan Molby. Oh, my God, Jan Molby. Brilliant. Fantastic. So it's a bit like the cricket pavilion in Melbourne. People were sat there watching for the off.
Paid money.
And I think Ronnie was thinking, he ain't going to do this.
It's going to blow up here. It's going to blow up.
Ronnie Moran is thinking that Jan Molby's going to tell Mark Leather, who do you think you are? You ain't doing this. I don't do that. Anyway, Jan Molby did, because he explained to him why he was doing it. It's just a few little
intense, short, sharp
that will lead onto the pitch when you transfer onto the pitch. And he did it, and it was a wake-up call to everybody else to think, well, if he's done it to Jan Molby, biggest player, one of the biggest players in the club, and he did it, then it just sort of made a few people suddenly get fitter.
It's interesting, isn't it?
So I think it was having the gumption to do that, and just thinking, what's the best way to get the best out of people, knowing that you need to know individuals a little bit.
Yeah. And having experienced the joys and the seeming tragedies of getting communication wrong myself in brutal, let's face it, hard-nosed, cutthroat environments where people have got agendas that you don't always know about, and buying into you what you want is not on their agenda. It's I fully empathise with that. Is that ability to, I think you're a great communicator, Mark. I think you've got that. Is that something that you, in that people skill element, is that something you had to develop, or was that something you kind of had as a almost a natural thing, would you say?
I think it's probably just me, inside and outside of football, and it's probably got me into trouble, maybe it's in some ways. But that's, even if you didn't become more direct with people in what you're telling them to do rather than asking them, because sometimes if you're not listening to me and I'm asking you to do it, you don't, you have to do it.
The next level.
And that's it. It's the next level. And that is always unpleasant. So no one likes it. No one likes to have a fallout. But I don't bear a grudge with people. And I would be the person that puts, come on, let's put our arm around each other and sit there. It's silly. It's all under the table. Water under the table. Let's move on. And you move things forward. But you have to have that in you to be able to do that. Some people would feel very hurt and disappointed if there's been some fallout. But then I questioned, are they really cut out to be working in this environment? Mm. And, some people clearly aren't, but they think they are, and they're not. And they change, for the worse. And suddenly they become, a shadow of their former person, where it's eaten them and it's spat them out of the business, the world of football, and it's left them scarred. And that's not an environment to be in, but unfortunately it can be like that.
Yeah, I think we both know, and that the world of professional football, I suppose, never being an actor, but is it analogous to like Hollywood, where on the outside, on Sky Sports, on the TV, superstars, looks great. It's a world that everybody wants to be in.
It is, isn't it?
But
the reality is often different. And I think you're right. But I think also that I say to people all the time about that: when you're dealing with people in any walk of life, then you are on stage. You're on stage every day. So as soon as you go into that workplace, this, particularly lecturing or being a physio or one of the performance staff, a staff member in the football, that's the way that the coaches are on stage. Mm. They don't work like that at home, talking to, the way that they do to the press and everything. They have to switch on and off. And I think we are like that. But then my training was, at a young age of 19 years old, you're going to a miners' rehabilitation centre in South Yorkshire, and there's 100 miners in a big room that are doing a warm-up for 30 minutes, and you're on a stage, stood on a table on the stage,
leading
taking
it.
Them for all these exercises and games and activities for 30 minutes, 19 years old, survive or...
Okay, so that brings me on to it brilliantly too. We've both lectured, we've both worked on courses, you worked extensively in higher education to high levels, Mark. I know you've mentored loads of people. And let's just talk a minute, if we can, about, you've just talked about there of being survive or die, 19 years of age, you know, 100 hard-nosed, hard-working men who could be 20, 30 years your senior, you know nothing compared to what they know about life, and yet you're there, and how do you feel about the way that society today tries to help young people into jobs, but actually I think they set them up to fail because the protective world that we live in, I'm trying to explain it in a good way, I'm not sure I'm doing it, but do you get what I'm...
I do, and I think that, you know, that sometimes that the... you know, how people are selected to go onto courses and jobs and universities and apprenticeships, they're now just a paper chase. It's very rarely are people actually fully interviewed. And actually, even if they are fully interviewed, some programmes in life, the professions, they're all offered a place anyway. So there isn't like it was before, where it's competition. Life is competitive. So please, let's not keep going back on about we shouldn't make it competitive. The afterwork, life is competitive, and me and you go for the same job. I want that job more than you. And if we've not been brought up with that culture of whatever competition means, then I think you're asking, you're making trouble, because it then, you know, they can't cope with that. It's not saying that you know, that everybody's going to achieve to their level of potential, but you're more likely to be able to get on in life if you've experienced some life problems that you've come through that can be quite challenging, and we understand that. But this survive or sink or swim,
it's necessary, isn't it?
It's necessary. But I think that the other thing that we did, which was quite innovative, by the way, back in the day, was that we went for a month to young offenders units to do physical education. Now, you were expected for the first week join in with everything that they do. So I went with one lad, and he said, I'm not joining in with all that circuit training and British Bulldog.
A student.
I'm not doing all that. They'll kill you. They've knocked nine bells out of you. And I said, well, they've told us we have to do it. I said, so... And then we had an assessment at the end of 4 weeks. These lads would be the subjects of your exercise class or whatever you were doing. So this PTI said to me, he said, your friend there, Mr. Leather, he said, he'll have a lot of trouble in 4 weeks' time, because they remember things, these lads. So if somebody's sitting on the side watching, he said, you've agreed to do all this, we've not seen you yet, but you've agreed to do it, and the lads know that because I've told them. And he said, I've also told him that your other friend,
he's not there,
he'll be on the sidelines. Will he really? Well, when it came to the assessment, they caused disasters to him. You know, he's explained it three times, he still get it wrong. It's a car crash. Everything is a complete and utter chaotic disaster.
We've been there.
And they've done that. So what happened to me was that they, you know, I remember vividly circuit training. Well, clearly you look at me and think this body has never lifted a weight. It's like, correct. I don't mind running, and I don't mind skiing, and I don't mind my bike. But you see these stuff.
You're not bad on golf, mate, I've heard.
Well, yeah. So, sometimes pretty bad. But I would go and lift these, try and lift these weights, and you can't lift them. So the lads would take and make them easy for you, while they would then bang the weights up and push them, you know, but then have a go.
Yeah.
One of the first thing that I had to do was British Bulldog. So they line up, one guy's in the middle of the gym, we're all at one end, we have to go to the other end, and then after about five or six goes of this, I thought, I know what they're going to do now. Not coming anywhere near me. They'll wait for me to be last, and then they'll knock bells out.
At least
they did for about 30 seconds. They weren't punching you or anything, but they ruffled me up. And you've sort of earned your colours.
Yeah.
And I think that is very like what football and sport is about.
Yeah, 100%.
Or you've had an unpleasant conversation that has taken place in the earshot in front of other players, and you've stood your ground.
100%.
And you think, you know what, That takes some doing. Well done. Did I like it? No. Did I feel a bit threatened? Or yeah. Did I feel awkward? Yeah. But it, you earned respect.
Earned your colours, mate.
Oh, earned your colours.
It's internal. Yeah.
And so, you know.
Yeah.
It's one of those
things. So, you've worked at Liverpool Football Club, Europe's arguably one of, you know, certainly the England's greatest clubs. Let's, you know, put fan, you know, fan allegiances aside. Head physio there, well respected. You worked at your hometown club. What was that like, either of those? And can you remember what it was like when you realised that you'd been offered those jobs, or you started them, or you'd got that? You know, what was that like, either one of those, or which was the best one, or what were they both different?
I think that while I was working at Burnley, I applied for the Liverpool job that was put my way, or told about it by Alan Hodgson at the Football Association. And this would have been back in the January where I was interviewed. I heard nothing for 3 months, which, looking back, that was a flipping long 3 months. Oh. Because I couldn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
I couldn't ring the club. Surely if they want you,
you'd have been in by
now. I'm thinking, I don't probably haven't, but nothing's been announced, or not that I was aware of. And then I got out of the blue a call to say come for your second interview, which I did. And then the following week, which would have been early end of April, they offered me the job, which obviously I was, you know, it was probably one of the happiest days of your life, you know, to get a job like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really pleased to do that. And I had to go into Burnley and hand me notice in the week of the playoff final, which was Burnley against Stockport County at Wembley. And that was my last match. And, you know, it was a... My son had been born the day after.
Wow.
Middle lad at Wembley. So my wife went into
labour. Happy time, mate, yeah.
It was a good time. So I think that was, you know, really good. But the interesting thing about Bolton was, when I'd left Liverpool, I'd worked with Sam Allardyce at Preston. He was a youth coach there. And Sam had taken the Bolton job. And he then asked me to come and be at the beginning of his journey as a Premier League manager. But that was in the Championship. And clearly working for the club, for the club that you support, that was a great thing, you know. I really enjoyed my time there, but I left to go to Sunderland probably a bit too soon, really. Sunderland were in the Premier League, but I was more interested in setting up and designing their training facilities.
Yes.
And everything else. I was more moving into that, I'd say, managerial role.
Yeah, leadership though.
Yeah, I did. And I felt I didn't want to just be the head physio treating people every day.
Yeah.
I got tired of that.
Yeah.
But my career moved in that way. But the thing about Liverpool was that when I went there, either the first or second season, I can't remember now, we played Bolton Wanderers at the Coca-Cola Cup final at Wembley. And so it was a dream game, that.
Wow.
You know, Bolton, you know, my team. And so everybody knew I was a Bolton fan, all the lads at the club anyway, from day one. So I thought, I had this football shirt that, you know, so training at Liverpool, the kids used to train with the staff for five-a-sides on Friday. That was a treat. So very soon, week two or three at Liverpool, I got my Wanderers shirt on, my Willie Morgan Wanderers shirt from the 1978 season. And I thought, I'll put that under my Liverpool wet top. And then when the teams are being announced for the five-a-sides, I took the top off and the Wanderers shirt's out. So I always played with the Willie Morgan shirt. And so in the final of this game at Wembley Stadium, we'd drawn Bolton, and I thought, I'll wind the play. The players knew what I was going to do. So in the dressing room, I was doing my usual strappings and a bit of rubs and that, and I thought it's a bit hot, so I took my Liverpool top off and I got my Wanderers shirt on.
Oh, Mark.
Everybody loved it, you know.
Did they,
apart from Ronnie Moran, thought it was disgusting. What are you doing wearing that rubbish? No wonder they call you Judas, he said.
You're a jinx, gonna be a jinx. Yeah.
But brilliant. So that was a great day.
Oh, mate.
You know, because all your mates are in the crowd.
Crowd, yeah.
They were, you know, it was a great game. And apart from McManaman, who ran the show that day, you know, Bolton did put up a good performance. And on another day, might well have, you know, turned the thing. But you don't think that, do you, really? When you're working for your team.
No.
You're your employers. You want your employers to win. It was very strange. People can't see that. I remember being in a pub in Bolton, nearly got knocked out. What are you doing jumping around when Liverpool scored against Bolton? Hit me now.
Hit me now.
I'll get it over with.
Yeah. Brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, that's good fun.
Okay. I'm really interested to know about the managers that you've worked with, because there'll be a lot. You've talked to me various times about, certainly about Sam and people that you've worked under. What have you picked up? What have you loved? What have you perhaps thought that's going to go wrong? What can you share with us about these personalities? Who they are? Personalities. They're absolutely stars of the football world. And having being that member of staff, where sometimes the manager will shut the door, Mark. It'll be you and him, and you get the opportunity. And you get that real person, don't you? You know.
You do, and I think that, I mean, there's three or four people that come to mind that are all different characters. So people like Sam Allardyce versus Gerard Houllier versus Peter Reid versus Howard Wilkinson or Roy Evans. They were all different characters in different ways. And I think that Roy was clearly somebody that had done the job that I was doing under the guise of the trainer, if you like, as Ronnie Moran had as well. But he knew what you were going to be going through because he'd been there.
Yeah.
And he'd had probably players when he was the trainer questioning him and threatening him in a way or being in your face and telling him what to do. So he fully knew that it's not an easy job. Mm. He never once ever interfered with anything to do with the injuries of the players or return to play or anything like that, because I think he knew that I wasn't a soft touch. I was the, and still am, glass half full. Better to have trained and tried to be fit than just say you can't.
Yeah.
And if he breaks down, he breaks down. Casualties in life all along the way. That's and the way it should be. Better to have had a go than just keep protecting players all the time. Can't do that. So that was one trend with him that's very easy to go with. He knew what the job was about. Then we've got maybe Gerard Houllier there, completely different, but exactly in a way what was needed for that club.
Right.
A bit like Arsenal with Arsenal.
Right man, right time.
You needed to take this boot room idea and move it on. Because it was not the same as it was under Bill Shankly, Bob Paisley. It had moved on, the game had moved, life had moved on. And so when he walked through the door, for somebody like us in our profession, he would have been a breath of fresh air and was, in a way, in his ideas. So nutrition and diet and training and rest and recuperation and recovery, all those things that we know in Portland, he was fine with. But he had, as we all know, from working with people, he probably had a streak in him where it was my way or the highway, or was expecting you to do a little bit that I was never comfortable with. My lighter players, cajole to say you're fit, but I know you're not fit.
Yeah.
And that culminated really with Michael Owen's injury, where I just felt I can't do this and I don't want to do it anymore. If you don't trust what is going on with a player at that age, that one minute he's at Lillishall's National School, 6 months later he's in Liverpool's first team, next minute he's in the England senior team, you can't keep playing him.
No.
With a hamstring injury,
it's
the
break
best
down.
Of times. You can't just mess about with them. And I was just being pushed into things that I didn't really feel comfortable with. So when I said what I did privately within the club, that resulted in him maybe putting something in the press that was a bit crass, really. So, and looking back, I know he said that to other people, that if he'd had an opportunity to do it again, he wouldn't have done it in that way, which was fine. So I don't, but I think his principles of what he was putting forward in Bobigno, I think they were good and sound as proof of how previous since him, other managers have now brought those principles into the game at almost any club. So he was probably the right man at the right time. Too maybe enthusiastic to get certain players fit at the beginning of pre-season when really he didn't need to, and that was my time to move on, where I just said, I can't work here anymore, I don't want to stay, I don't want to work with this, I want to go and do something else. Whereas on the flip side, say Howard Wilkinson, and what you'd got there was Howard had been away from club management at Sunderland for quite a while and been the FA technical director. He'd not really managed club football. And he said to me, that I knew him vaguely, Howard, and he said, if you're still in football at your age now, with the clubs that you've worked out and been at, then I know you must be doing something right. So between you and me, you just crack on with what you're doing, because...
This was at where, Mark?
Sunderland, yeah. Yeah. But Howard had a conversation with me one day with a lad called David Bellion, and who'd got his pre-contract with Manchester United,
right,
but then suddenly stopped playing, didn't want to play games just in case he got injured,
right.
And actually Howard said, what do you think, how can we get this lad to play? He said, he can't, because he's being told by his agent not to play. He's got a deal, he's on his way to Man United, he won't want to play.
Yeah, he's saving himself.
And even in that short period of time that he'd been away from there, the game had moved on.
Yeah.
And obviously Sam, as you know, has got many, many great points, and a real good communicator, motivator, great guy to work with, looked after his staff, looked after his players, and fantastic chap, really, for me, great guy, and I still speak to him now.
Yeah. You've obviously, as well as your football, Mark, developed the education side in universities. You've obviously had a desire to do that, otherwise you wouldn't have invested the time you've done. What is it about that kind of floats your boat? Because you've always been interested from afar, looking in, that in developing people and young people and giving them chances and educating.
Well, I think that comes from my own background. You know, you're born on the edge of the roughest council estate in Bolton. You know, Brakemit in Bolton probably still is.
Right.
I mean, this is no disrespect, by the way, to people that live in Brakemit in Bolton. Yeah. It's a tough place to live. And so people that make a success in any way, shape or form, success is multiple examples and parts to success. You know, somebody that works in, for say, the local council on the parks and recreation department for 30 years, you know, that's a fantastic achievement for some people, and that's what they wanted to do. And I felt that there was so many things that probably in football particularly that you could improve on, that you could make an impact on the training of some of these lads, girls that were coming into to the game. It wasn't a close shot with chartered physios. We're sick of hearing about that. Chartered physios, this. I'm a chartered physio. You are, but there are other people that can do just as good a job if they are given the chance to do that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I understand the HCPC, the public, you know, health protection, public, etc. But I think that I always felt that these people have got a role to play, and not necessarily to lead big departments in Premier League football clubs. But there's, you know, 40,000 clubs affiliated to the Football League. So for even at grassroots, something to get a first aid certificate or a treatment of injury certificate, they're doing a job, they're providing a service that wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
So that was the interest in the early days of doing that. And same with the training of degree programmes, whether it's sports therapy or physiotherapy. There's loads of things that I felt that you could make an improvement on in the context of musculoskeletal injury treatment, prevention, etc. And I felt that my other area of interest was always the fitness side of things, the sports science, sports physiology. And the first thing I did at Liverpool Football Club in the first week was to go and find what was going on at John Moores University and doing a part-time master's degree in sports science, because I knew that I wanted to learn more about that.
Yeah, yeah.
That side of the game. And I felt that I needed to have at least a reasonably educated opinion to have a conversation with somebody who is a nutritionist or somebody that is a physiologist, somebody that is a strength and conditioning.
Yeah.
None of which were in Liverpool Football Club at the time. It was Mark.
It was all on you. Everything.
So we had to build that staff.
Yeah.
And so I thought it'd be nice to do that. And that sort of got me into the academic side of things. But these master's programmes that you mentioned, that are course lean on, that they really try to be vocationally driven, giving people skills to work in that department.
Yeah.
Because too many times I've employed people that are new graduates and they're not fit for practice because the degrees that they're on aren't fit for practice.
Yeah.
They're not aligned to what the real world is about.
Yeah.
It's interesting that degree programmes are usually reviewed on a 3-year cycle. Well, a lot can happen in 3 years,
yeah,
by the way, of sports injury management. So unless you're constantly feeding new information and ideas into that, you very quickly find that your programmes are old hat.
Yeah.
Which is the challenge that we've got in keeping doing that. But that's something that I like doing until I stop enjoying it or somebody gets rid of me. I'll still do it. Because I feel that, I still work with the club now. I do some work with Barrow Football Club, and if I walked in that door at that football club and looked around the dressing room or in the coach's room and thought they were looking at me thinking, who's this guy, I'd have walked straight out. I'd have looked them in the face and said, you don't need me, you don't want me, probably, thanks very much, because I'm not hanging around having to have conversations that I had 40 years ago with people. And I actually don't feel that in that club. I feel that they respect who you are and the way that you deal with them. They find it quite strange that you've still got an appetite
to go to
away games.
I know.
Barrow at Newport County on a Saturday there and back in the same day to watch that match.
I know, yeah.
Why would you do that? But I like it.
Because you're Mark Leather, mate. That's why.
Well,
yeah. And tell us about, you've obviously developed a successful business, this is about, there's people out there who listen to this podcast who would love to have half of your success, and here's you with a stellar football career, a substantial educational career, a damn successful business. How have you balanced all that, mate? Because it's not easy.
The first thing is, I never had a business while I was in professional football full time, because that doesn't work. And I used to see people running on the pitch with their business name on the back of their bags or the back of the shirts, and I thought, you can't do that.
No.
Because where's Mark Leather? In fact, Brighton Football Club was one of the first club full time. Why was I there? Because somebody was in that role before me that did exactly that. And it was, you're now muddying the water.
Yeah.
So I never did that. I only started treating business privately when I came out of football, and I felt that, was it out of the desire to do physiotherapy to private patients? No. It was probably financial. And he got three lads
make a profit.
And a mortgage to pay.
Exactly.
He needed a business. And so I concentrated on doing that and other bits of strands that I was doing within the university or working for the FA with the England futsal team, as you mentioned early on. And that's really over 15 years now that business takes over. I have somebody else that runs it on a day-to-day basis who does a really good job. I oversee things. I don't treat that many people. I pick and choose little bits of interesting clients that you might see. And it pays a living. I think we provide a decent service. But your network of people that I've been lucky enough to develop and evolve with through various ways allows me to almost, I think people know that there are jobs, if they want some extra work they can do that, if it suits them to do that, so that helps to sort of recruit people for something to, that is just a part-time job to them, a little bit extra, relatively easy going, and it seems to work quite well. It's a mix of all kinds of stuff, from private payers, sports injuries, to in the main medical, legal and occupational health climates.
So here's one, a little bit left field for you. How would you solve the NHS's problems, being as we're on that track?
Well, I mean, they're in a mess, aren't they? Through no fault of the people that are in the National Health Service on the shop floor, but the system's been broken like everything else has been broken. You know, it's the perfect storm. The country is a mess. And it's not that easy to solve it overnight, but you need to have access to, almost like you need it, access like you've got a chemist. They're on the street, the high streets, you can get you. And we're talking about pharmacists now, actually, making more clinical decisions. That's a good thing. You know, GP's practice, do we need to go to GP's practice with a lot of these things that's blocking serious appointments? Or probably not. So we need direct referral for MSK stuff, physios, even, you know, sports therapy, sports rehabilitators that's got their own professional body insurance behind them, to give people quicker access. That you're still paying, you know, you're paying for a service. Would need to be paid for, but it's quicker access, preventing more serious pathologies developing, nail it in the, you know, in before it becomes something more chronic, that we know that causes major problems. So you get a bad back, treat it right away, access it immediately. What do we want? Somebody with chronic backache and a raging disc bulge that ends up
6 months later,
it's just crazy,
can't deal with it,
and nothing's changed in 30 years. No. It's exactly the same thing.
Do you not think it's too, the administration's just rules the world with it, that's part of the, it's too costly to remove that administrative overload now, and well, as long as that continues,
I do think that there needs to be some additional taxation, which is unpopular at this moment in time, clearly, because everybody's fucking struggling with things, but I do believe that's right. And certainly the health and social care tax, if that's what it's going for, you know, in terms of people being in a nursing home, you know, that somebody has to pay for that. Community care, people getting them out of hospital beds into the home, that was the same as it was back in the day, but it's worse, much worse. People's, you know, they'd know where to put these people. So we need to pay more into those things. And part of that, I don't know, health and social care thing would be that you part of your tax enables you to access, you know, these injuries that we're talking about. It's no good just giving somebody a sheet of paper.
No.
You know, how does a GP assess somebody properly for anything really in 10-minute appointments? There, but for the grace of God, goes everybody. They've only so many hours in the day, and you can only do so many things. Yeah. But I think that there also, by the way, is a lot of spare money floating around. You only have to look at loads of people. So maybe those people should be, or are, taking up more activities, more extreme sports. We see that all the time.
Yeah.
They buy all the kit, they have all the clobber, they go all over the world, and they'll be the first people that's knocking on your door to get some treatment.
Yeah, and it's
so I think
free.
That's it. That's it. Or you make, and they're paying for that service. So, you know, they are paying for it. I mean, I see them, and I'm sure you do, the people that spend a lot of money on, say, the golf clubs and all that, but they've hurt their knee, they've got a bad back, they'll go and find a physio down the road to treat them because they want to go playing golf. And that's, let's face it, 40 quid versus £2,000 piece of set of golf clubs or a bike. I mean, I've got to get my money's worth.
Yeah.
So there is that. I think more people are prepared to pay for that.
Yeah. So here's another one for you that people who listen to this podcast will probably be asking. For somebody who's done so much in life, how difficult has it been, Mark, to balance your life? You've obviously got, you know, your kids who are growing up and getting on in the world, and, you know, your family life. challenges on that? Because that's something I think everybody faces. Yeah,
I think the challenges are that certainly in football, as your term of office might be less than you think it's going to be, through no fault of your own. So moving families and moving everybody around the country.
And you've had to do that, yeah.
I've done that, but I wouldn't do it now. I probably couldn't afford to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all different. But it was only really at primary school age. They had one more move after a year or 2 years at secondary school, and then they didn't move again. But if you ask the lads, my lads, what they think, they probably may not have liked it all the time, but it didn't do them any harm. It provided them the opportunities to meet people, settle in, move around, and they're mobile, and they're all in London now, so it's not, they've all been to uni, so it's probably helped them in that way. But I did try to balance it in the fact that you always had a summer holiday with them. We always, in an international break, we might have had a few days where we could do something with them. Schools were pretty good. They understood that if you took them out of school for 2 or 3 days in the middle of out of a half term week, say when an international break might be in October, and half term's not till October, November, the end of October, they didn't mind that.
Yeah.
They knew what you had to do. So I tried to do that, but it is tough. But then I never really viewed it as work.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not like working in a bank, kid.
Obviously
that was
not.
Always like thinking, God, I can't,
I've got to get out of here.
If you had to do that and work Saturdays and Sundays and work till, it would have. So I don't really view it as work. And if I did, I wouldn't be doing it now, probably.
Absolutely not. No, that's obvious. So, having said that, and had a little bit of a journey through your start in education and that change of course where you had to kind of think, do you know what, I've got one chance here, embarking on a career that obviously has suited your mark, getting on with it, applying your ability to get on with people and maximising that, having that career in the game, still involved in it. You've still got that passion now after 30 years, your higher education work, which is still going on, your business, what's kind of, is there anything left for you to look at? Is it, are you more of a, let's see what turns up? Is it one of them? Or?
Well, I think that sometimes the more you've done and the more people you've met, you might get more opportunities that come your way. And I wouldn't say that's always the case, by the way.
No.
Suddenly the phone stops
ringing. Lonely
so
world, eh?
It's a lonely world. Long live the king. The king is dead.
Dead.
You're here today, gone tomorrow. But I do think that, I could be described as being a dinosaur because of my age, but I'm not, and I know I'm not, because I embrace lots of new ideas, but I also keep very close to me the principles and the key things that are still relevant now, as they were 30, 40 years ago, is back to this communication and people skills and interest and motivation and trusting people, and they build trust because you don't lie.
Yeah, yeah.
The minute
truth.
You start lying,
truth.
Tell them the truth, get the bad news out
truth.
Right away.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once that bad news is gone, then we can move on. There's always a way, and always a way to solve it. So I think that, for me, while I'm still enjoying things, this new course is the football, medical, leadership and performance one that's been validated for September start. That's a challenge now, to get it up and running and for it to be successful like the other one is. How long I'll do it for, me personally, I don't know. But a lot of the speakers on there are people that I've worked with and that you've called in favour. So whoever takes it over, which hopefully somebody will do, is that they've got the same connections and the same desires for people to help, the new generation. Because all of them that have agreed to do that, that's what they want to do. It's not like helping me, just helping me.
Just
they want to pass some of their things on to the new generation of people wanting to work in football or wanting to lead in football.
Brilliant. Right, three things to finish this off, mate.
Right.
One, what advice would you give to this 18-year-old male or female who's thinking, I want to do what he's done, or a bit of what he's done? What would you say to him in 30 seconds?
What I'd say to them is find out as much information as you can do about what the job and the world of sport, football, is all about. And if you really want to do it, you've got to spend a lot of time and give commitment of your own volition, your own expense, to get a network as any way possible that you can to get your feet under the door and give you that little step on the ladder. And if you want something, often in life, 9 times out of 10, you probably get it eventually. For how long, I don't know.
Brilliant. And outside this career, business, education, what else is in Mark's life? Music? Bit of golf, maybe.
Well, the only thing with golf is it's the most infuriating thing that I've ever done. It's like no other sport. I've just come back from a skiing holiday that I've not had a set of skis on for 3 years because of COVID, and it was like you've never been away from it. So I ski at my level, reasonably good. Play golf, you know, I have no idea what's happening from shot to shot. All I know is I've got a very good idea that it won't be consistent shots and strokes. It will be always some good ones and always some absolutely downright dreadful things that looks as though you've never held a golf club. I might as well. I said to somebody the other day, the only thing I've never putted with is a cricket bat. I'm going to try
it. Might help improve.
So I like that, but I don't like competitive golf. I just like to play and enjoy the scenery. So golf is what I do. I've got a dog that I walk and run with the dog with my wife, and we love that. And I've got a mountain bike that I spend quite a bit of time cycling. Not so much in the winter, but through the summer. And I like to have something in the pipeline. So last year it was cycling the Pennine Bridle Way 200 miles with a good friend of mine, Mark Nile, another physio up in Yarm. This year it's the Liverpool to Leeds Canal and back, full circle. And not that I'm a serious cyclist, of course, but I just like something to look forward to. Them. And then we have a place in Portugal that we're lucky to have, and we go over there quite a lot in short little blocks.
Yeah, beautiful.
And that's it. I like my football. I'm going to Wembley, as you know, because I've told you before this went on. Bolton Wanderers against the mighty Green Army of Plymouth Argyle.
Absolutely, mate.
The Papa John's Cup final, 2nd of April.
Yeah.
And so that's my little treat out that. So, yeah, pretty simple.
And last thing, mate, if anybody's out there who thinks, you know what, I'd like to get in touch with Mark, whether that's they've got some kind of contractual work for your physio business, or they want to find out more about NMSC, what's the best way to get in touch with you? Is it your website?
Yeah, well, it could be the business website, or it could be just the university that you see the courses that are advertised.
That's UCLan, isn't it?
It's UCLan, University of Central Lancashire. And, you know, anything to do with my own LinkedIn profile, if any, that's probably the easiest way to...
On LinkedIn, yeah.
Is LinkedIn, yeah.
Well, we've batted on here, mate, for maybe about an hour, mate, so I can't thank you enough for your time, Mark.
Pleasure.
It's been an absolute pleasure, as always, so thanks for your time, pal.